I am going to open the House Committee on Education, and this is the Subcommittee on Education Innovation. Today is Thursday, March 8th, and I do appreciate people that are here in the audience. We are obviously short of some of our colleagues, but I think it's important that we have people that came some distance to testify today, and it's important information. And just that you know, if there is a call of the House, we will need to leave. And so we will possibly just recess, or we'll just close the hearing. So with no further ado, I'll have the committee chair give us a little bit of background, and I'm going to open the hearing on public hearing on 2750.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2750 creates a task force on school computers and directs the task force to study the costs and obstacles of providing laptop computers to kindergarten through grade 12 public school students. It declares an emergency and will become effective July 1st, 2007. Members of the committee, you have before you the staff measure summary with information on the bill. We do not have a fiscal impact statement yet. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Beyer, if you want to lead us off in this discussion. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Representative Terry Beyer, House District 12. And thank you for scheduling a hearing on this bill. It would have been, it's been a crazy couple of days, and I've had problems in my committee too. So I did invite a group of constituents up of mine and a group from Eugene to talk about what they're doing with computers in their schools. And in my school, there was an Apple one-to-one initiative in one of the middle schools that it was, I went and visited the schools. It was a great program. And I think that they've learned a lot. There were some pretty good gains made in that school. And I think that we need to start planning for more access to computers in schools, more infrastructure to make that use a little easier for kids and teachers. And so that's why I introduced this bill, so we'd start taking a look at it. And the other group I brought up was from Eugene School District, and they have one project going in an elementary school and more on the way. And I only, you know, I've been focused on my district, so I only just learned of this. So they're here kind of to tell you what they've learned from what Springfield has done and where they're going. So I'm going to go ahead and open it up for them to talk to you about this.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Representative Beyer before she leaves the... Okay, thank you. Do we have a preferred sequence?
Springfield.
Okay, Springfield.
And our school board member is...
Well, they merge. He always does. So,
and what we ask is when you, before you give your testimony, to share your name and what, you know, district you're representing.
Great. I'm Nancy Golden. I'm superintendent of Springfield Public Schools. So, I'm going to just talk a few minutes about why did Springfield decide to be the first school district to do a one-to-one initiative in a time where we were cutting resources in many other areas. And then Tom Lindley is our technology coordinator, and he'll really get into what it takes, because I know this, what's important is people really understand the reality of what it takes. So someday if there are resources put towards this, we know the right amount of resources.
And Dr. Golden, are you going to tell us what the one-on-one program is?
Okay. Sure. So why don't I just start with that? The one-on-one program, which we call START, is that in our middle school, every child has a laptop computer 24/7. So they bring it to school, they have it all day, they take it home, and they have it on the weekends. One of the big problems, just a little story we faced when we first did it, is kids were so excited about getting on the network, they were hiding in the bushes with their little laptops before school. And we said, you don't need to hide in the bushes. We'll make it so you can have access at any time. So very wonderful. But I just want to tell you, why would we do this, and why, as a new superintendent, it was my first year, would I lead this? And what I want to say is, when I first came to Springfield, like a lot of districts, we have many students in poverty, in need, having all the indicators of kids who don't have some of the ready-to-learn advantages. And I heard language like, well, with the kind of kids we have, they just won't be able to pass the state test. And what that meant to me is that we really needed some powerful instructional interventions that could show if students have the right tools, they certainly can learn. And the one-to-one initiative seemed like a great intervention because of a few things they could do. And some of the things that they could do is, for example, if the textbook's on the computer, and if a child reads at the eighth grade level, they can read at the eighth grade. If they read at the fifth grade, you can just kind of push a button and lower the readability so they're reading the same text but at a level. So you can start seeing how you can differentiate instruction. The other thing is, for children who have never traveled, might never have the opportunity, you know, to travel out on the net. You're studying Abe Lincoln, you push a button, he emerges and gives his speech. So it just really created opportunities that many of our children weren't going to get otherwise. So those are sort of the reasons. Now, this is our third year with the initiative.
Dr. Golden?
Yeah.
Our microphones are, like, really sensitive, so we can lounge back.
Okay, got it.
There you go.
Thank you. Appreciate that. This is
a little bit of an echo.
Yeah. This is our third year with the initiative, and we're really pleased to tell you that Springfield Middle School has met AYP every single year. It was a school, a Title I school, that if we didn't do a powerful intervention, it was going to be in sanction. So, and now it's just got incredible results. It is one of the achievement gap schools that is being honored. It's you know, they do 10, and it
right.
was five of the, not the first level, but the second. So in 3 years, we've had incredible results, and we do believe this is one of the key reasons that we're having those
okay.
results.
Just a minute. Before we forget, most of us on this panel right now are all educators, but a lot of people don't know what AYP is.
Oh, yeah. Annual Yearly Progress, that's with the No Child Left Behind bill, and, you know, it just means the amount of progress you need to make.
Right. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Matthew. I just wanted to, you started to go there, but do you attribute the success of the school just to this program, or this program being part of many steps that you've taken?
Well, I think it's part of many steps, but I do think it's the thing that allows the differentiation that you need when you have gifted kids and kids who can't speak English and kids with special needs. And I don't think we would have gotten those results without this intervention.
Thank you.
Representative Cannon.
Yes.
Representative Cannon is a middle school teacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to follow up on that line of questioning. What is it about the laptop that produces better learning results? Could you sort of speculate on that a little bit and
yeah.
maybe speak more to the differentiation
yeah.
point? That
yeah. When I was sold on this was when I went into a classroom and saw an incredibly powerful teacher doing a great lesson and kids were not engaged. Because these kids, the minds are different. They're doodling with this, not doodling. They're using technology like this all the time. And so I think it creates the engagement that they see with their cell phones and all the other things they have. But in terms of the differentiation, you know, not only does it lower readability, but, for example, if you're a child who speaks Spanish, you just have to click over to Spanish, and you can be reading the book in Spanish, and then you can click over for English, and maybe someday the teacher says, you've been doing Spanish for 3 days, try it in English now. So it does that. It's also, if they don't know a vocabulary word, you can click on the vocabulary word, and it will give you the definition. So it has all of those tools that with one teacher and 35, and we often have 35 children, you couldn't do it without it, I would say. Because, you know, if 10 kids need a different vocabulary word, every child could be looking it up as opposed to the teacher having to run around.
Oh, yeah. Before you go any further, because I'm very fiscally minded, in comparison, if you had to buy textbooks for a sixth grade class or a laptop, how many years of textbooks would you have to purchase compared to the cost of a laptop?
Do you want to talk a little bit about the cost?
And yeah, I can talk about the cost of the laptops. I'm not a textbook cost expert, however.
If you'll need to introduce yourself.
Oh, my name is Tom Lindley. I'm the technology services manager at Springfield Schools, and I was involved in the implementation of the one-to-one. So when we go back and look at all of our numbers, we set up a budget initially, and our budget was about $900 per student per year. And that included computer hardware, computer software, infrastructure to support those computers, because we needed to expand our network a whole lot if you're going to cut a 300 computers loose on your network, and also included a full-time support person at our school to work with the teachers, to mentor the teachers, to help develop lesson plans, as well as just take kind of care of the logistics of managing 300 to 350 computers.
Thank you.
Hi, Al King, Springfield, Oregon. I'm on the Springfield School Board. I used to be honorable like yourselves. But
I'm sure you're still honorable.
Some of what you're asking about, I was going to cover in my opening remarks.
Well,
I was going to try and get my car turned around, but I guess my timing doesn't work on my meter now. So one of the reasons why I had asked for this bill to be introduced was my concern about equity in the district. When we introduced these computers, it's really cool to have computers, for every kid in the school. But what was not immediately obvious was that it wasn't just a computer. It was a whole lesson program. It was the testing. It was the research. And these kids, demonstrated to us an epiphany where they 100% of the parents attended the orientation session with the kids. And this is a low-income, high-mobility school. And then so as soon as they got their computer, they started doing research on the web. They were, operating on the hot site. And it's just real clear that, the kids today are so technologically oriented that learning on the computer is cool. And, in my day still, a lot of the textbook learning was, a drudgery. And so that's changed a lot. So it's real clear to me that as we go forward, move out 10 years from today, and the wealth of what's on this site and other competitors coming into the market and more, that, the kids are going to be transitioning from textbooks over to the computers. And as you know, it's such a long time to plan what textbook you're going to use, and they're current for 2 or 3 years, but they're so expensive you keep them for 10 years or so longer, whereas the computer system is, up to date all the time. And one of my fears was that when we would take a look at the equity in the district about, well, we're doing it for this junior high but not the other ones, we're not doing it for all the schools, and you have to drop your computer when you go to high school, of how do we expand it? Well, let's say then that we decide that we'll bite that bullet. We really love the program. It's effective. And we spend a couple $1 million or whatever it is to then computerize. And then along comes the legislature a couple years later, said, that's really a good idea. We'll do it for everybody. And we just, drop $2 million of our general fund for something that might have been done statewide later. And so I was thinking that it'd be a lot better if we took a look at how to do this. So at a statewide level, have our best heads say, well, how do we transition? Do we, do we do carts? Do we do, computers? What's the best way to train? What's the best way to do hardware? Can we buy computers in bigger, bigger bundles? So I think that when we take a look at, the next decade, that doing this kind of a study, might save us, I expect it to save us millions of dollars, in terms of what the outcomes would be and move us there quicker and better. So, and I think that addressed some of the questions you had. Thank you very much for the hearings.
Questions?
Because
I have one afterwards.
Just welcome back and thank you for your testimony, and thanks for wearing that tie today.
Tell us a story. Indira was on the floor, when she was born. So.
Oh, my gosh.
I just have a quick question. We've heard testimony, and Representative Cannon and Representative Dahlem, who's not here at the moment, are deeply immersed in learning about virtual class coursework. And through your technology purchase, this is particularly about NA differentiated instruction, so that your high-end learner or just you have the person, my passion is to help all students become readers. And so literacy support is critical. Do you do any online courses as additions to your curriculum or not?
Well, I'd like, this is Al King for the record, that I'd like to take first crack at that, but I'm not the best answer. But I bumped into my old friend Jeff Krupp, and he's on a school board of a virtual school for a charter school. And so when we gathered here to come before you, you know, I think that's an important topic for our district. And so I brought that issue, you know, forward to Superintendent Golden, and probably something we need to look at, like in our retreat, you know, for this year to see how to bring that in. And it's a natural progression of what it is that we're doing. So,
Dr. Golden.
In terms of do we use it now, you know, they're kind of two different interventions. A lot of people who use virtual schools, a lot of homeschool parents use it, kids who maybe want an advanced course, but we're talking about a classroom teacher who has 35 kids and needs to meet the needs of all of those kids, given that they have a wide range of abilities. So I think that's another important piece of the menu. But I do want to tell you, we are using technology to do reading interventions, and you know, like Read 180 has been phenomenal for us. What are the other ones, Tom?
Reading Counts, Read Naturally, both computer-based programs that address specifically around literacy.
We've got Cognitive too. We have a new A3 school. We're using Cognitive Tutor with high school kids who haven't engaged in regular curriculum. They are skipping elective programs. They won't go to lunch to do this cognitive tutor. I mean, it's individualized. You know, you could be a pre-algebra. Right. You could be a calculus. And these kids came to the school board. It's just amazing. And so I think this is more about in-the-classroom intervention.
Yeah. Representative Cannon?
Yeah, I want to just offer a reflection and then get your response. And that is, if I was teaching at a school that had this kind of initiative, I'd be, at least initially, a little worried. I'd feel like, gosh, this is going to complicate the way that I teach. It's going to take me out of a comfort zone and perhaps the way I was trained to teach. It sounds like it's going to add to the number of sort of responsibilities. I'm going to have to learn new software. I'm going to have to find ways to make sure that kids have their computers, they're using them appropriately, etc. What sort of support, I think, sorry, I don't remember your name, but Tom spoke to the fiscal side of things, mentioned the staff person, but that's a single staff person who's spending part of their day on working with teachers. What does this look like in the classroom?
And you'll notice that the sheet we passed out here, it talks a little bit about that, and that's a really good question. It was a concern, and one of the things that, as we look to deploy additional instructional technology, whether it's one-to-one computing or just additional computers in the schools, we definitely need to provide support for the teachers. And they were nervous. And I think what we did was we brought in a one-week institute up front and worked with the teachers to give them some tools. And our idea wasn't that the teacher's going to walk in, the kids walk in with their computer, and then 8 hours a day you're going to be using your computer to do things. Brought in some ideas around lessons. There's some real easy things the teachers can do with using video. We have some microscopes, USB microscopes that plug into the side to let you look at things like a microscope and then capture that picture so they can put together different collections of information. So there's a lot of things. We didn't start at the epitome of one-to-one computing, but we've continued to work real closely with our teachers on training and learning new things. We have a long ways to go, and I think that's one of the keys as we look forward to, I think, one-to-one computing will continue to grow, and that is to have some opportunities for teachers to learn about these things, for teachers, different districts to share. We're actually working with a number of districts trying to put together how can we share lesson plans, how can we share information, what works, what doesn't work. And in addition to the teacher piece, there was also a lot of policy and procedure we needed to put together with parents, with teachers, like you mentioned, new in-school rules. You know, we initially saw our behavioral incidents. We tracked that through a behavioral tracking system. All of a sudden, here's this big spike in behavior, and we're going, what's going on? Well, there's a whole lot of new rules the kids need to follow around the use of the computers and so forth.
I think it almost goes without saying that this is a really important point, and that we shouldn't regard, my brief editorial comment, we shouldn't regard computers as a kind of magic bullet, that this kind of work that went on with teachers building over time is what can possibly make a computer successful.
Just When we were considering asking a school if they wanted to do this, they gave us a list of 3 pages of things they needed. The first one, they needed to visit a school who had done it before. We went to California to do that. So I appreciate you saying that. And that's why I think studying this is so important, because you would need to, you know, we'd have to be real clear about what it really takes.
The teacher's still supercritical, the most important part, but it is interesting to see how the style of teaching changed very much immediately. So that, you know, not so much the classic stand in front of the class, give
teacher
a lecture,
directed.
Look out, you have some kids engaged, some kids bored, et cetera. Now you still have some of that, but a lot of times you go out and the kids are actively engaged and the teacher's more supporting that. And if the teacher were to try and give the classic old, this is the blackboard and here's a formula, look out, you know, their heads would be down on their computers and, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have them. So it has changed a lot. But I think that we're getting a lot more productivity, you know, out of that.
Well, I'm going to ask the next group to come up because my instincts are telling me our clock's ticking to get back to the floor, but I absolutely appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And we also brought with us Julie Schoen, and she's with Apple Computer.
Okay.
She introduced that to our system if she's a resource for
us. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
If the Eugene people want to come up to speak and tell us your experiences. Just a side note as you're joining us, when we first started this work in this committee's called the Innovative Subcommittee on Education, I asked Representative Buckley, because he's part of helping the leadership form committees, and I said, what does that mean? I think we're learning. If you'd introduce yourselves.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, I'm Carla Zimmerman. I'm the certified technology coach at Howard Elementary School. And my colleague is?
My name is Linda Kirk, and I'm currently a first grade teacher, but I have taught first through third for 9 years at Howard.
Thank you for doing that.
And I'm glad we're following Nancy and Tom from Springfield School District, because in Eugene School District, we've adopted the one-to-one immersion program at an elementary school, which is different than the middle school. And so much of what they did to implement their program, we did as well. So I won't, unless you want me to, go into great details. But it really was 2 years of planning. And there was representation on a technology leadership team by teachers in the school at every grade level, administrators in the building, administrators at the district level, as well as parents in the community. So it was a long-term planning process. And I think that's pretty critical. Is planning. What is going to be your staff development plan? How much staff development are you going to give teachers, and how are you going to do it? I think those are all really critical pieces to implementing this type of program, but also having an acquisition plan for hardware, what's the software are you going to use? Mm-hmm. Are you going to use Apple format or Apple computers? Are you going to use PC computers? We chose Macintosh, Apple MacBooks, and have had great success with the software there for the elementary school programs. So we kind of that planning year, and then we had a lot of staff development, a lot of preparation, and that piece that you talked about, Representative Cannon, about teachers being ready. It is a huge paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. If you've been teaching 20 years with paper and pencil and books, to suddenly have all these laptops in your room and a scanner and a smart board, and what do I do with it? How do I really make that change to present lessons that are powerful using this technology and to glean the information from my students and the learning from my students? So we spent, same as Springfield, a week-long summer institute, and being the certified technology coach at Howard, I've been able to develop individualized staff development plans for every teacher. So I work individually with teachers. I do overall staff development, but I also work individually at their level. So some teachers much more advanced in technology use, maybe some of the younger teachers more advanced. Those who are more fearful, we take smaller steps. So I think that's a critical piece.
Were you a classroom teacher?
It's interesting. No, I wasn't. I just went back.
Are now.
I am now. went back and got my master's.
Oh, no, I mean as you teach teachers.
I did. It's interesting. I worked for the district for 6 years and did a lot of staff development in another realm. And so as a new teacher, they just, I think, saw something in me. I don't know. I was just lucky to end up there.
Okay.
Plus, I'm a little techie. I think that helped. So I think what we really want to stress is the outcomes for our students. So it took a ton of planning and a ton of work on our staff's from our staff, but the outcomes are what have been so powerful. And we just implemented in September. So we don't have kind of the hard data that Springfield has, mm-hmm. but what we do have is a lot of change that we're seeing in our students, the population, and the kinds of learning and the kinds of teaching that is happening. And one thing I really, really want to stress from our perspective is that digital divide. At Howard Elementary, we have 70% of the kids on free and reduced lunch. We have a 30% attrition rate. It's a population of students who live very challenged lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole concept of the digital divide, it's there whether we like it or not. I'm a digital immigrant. These kids are digital natives. They use it. They know it. I read somewhere
great
recently
terminology.
That 350 billion text messages are sent out every day on
yes.
cell phones.
Uh-huh.
And I send maybe one every 2 weeks. You know, so I think we just need to deal with that digital divide and give those kids what they need to be successful. So I think I'm going to turn it over to our classroom teacher because she really knows how it's impacting
us. Honorable Chair Comp
and Representative Roblin's back, and so these speakers are from Eugene.
Yes, I actually knew that. I saw you introduced in today.
I not only feel like it's a privilege to speak to you today, but I feel like it's a real privilege to be teaching first graders at Howard Elementary in Eugene, Oregon. As Carla mentioned, there's been a huge paradigm shift. We've seen it in strategies and we've seen it in methods. The biggest strategy is that the teacher is more of a facilitator, a planner, a guide who directs the children in the direction that we want to take them. After some formal lessons, we use a lot of this for anchor activities, and I'll go into more about reading in a minute. They're becoming independent learners. They're fascinated with electronic text. That is really what is the key that's capturing their brains. It's another tool for them. It's like a pencil, and it's making them responsible for their learning and taking some ownership in what's happening instead of just sitting there and waiting for what is going to be passed on to them. In writing, we've noticed kids who have fine motor skill problems that are having a horrible time writing, and you try to get a first grader to help copy a sentence, you know, it's torture. Well, they're doing much better on keyboards, so that is helping a little bit there with some of them. Differentiating instruction is what I see as the hugest piece, because our goal in our course is to have each child performing at the appropriate rate and level of learning. And you always have the high children who finish quickly, who need to be better challenged, and this is a perfect avenue for them. Whereas the low children get frustrated with the difficulty of the work, and you can guide them to a lower level of the same concept and work with them. So the frustration levels, our behaviors have greatly improved. I see a lot of highs working with lows, which traditionally we were trained you never a partner a high with a low, but that's worked really well. We have a big focus throughout our building on what we call project-based learning, and the whole essence to me is you teach the children the skills and make them make that transfer so they can apply the skills into something that they can do with it. We've given them rubrics and guidelines for what we expect from them, and another key piece is their knowledge has to be useful to them in their world and their lives, and so now they have the freedom to search the web, to with guidance from teachers, and as far as we do a lot with ethics on using the internet, and that they can research pictures, they can research information instead of taking 10 encyclopedias out of the library and going down and photocopying them after school and bringing them back. It's instant for them. And we've done keynotes with first graders that were just really powerful. It's mostly student-driven because there's less wait time. So many times I see children in the classroom waiting for what can I do now? Well, I'm over here helping the child who can't do it yet.
Right.
So that's been huge. That's been really wonderful for them. The cooperative learning pieces, they're excited about sharing and talking and showing to each other what they've learned, what they're doing. And I really think it raises the bar for the lower child as far as meeting all these benchmarks and goals, because we've ability grouped kids too long, and they need to be more in an atmosphere where they can see what's out there instead of just seeing where they're at. And then their models and teachers to each other. The non-traditional learners, the kids that we seem to, they just don't go down the track the same way. Maybe one will do really well on a computer but can't do well in a traditional setting, and the kids have respect and validated their peers because they can do this. And then the real passion, it's why I teach first grade, is reading. And our building this year made a huge, huge goal to make language arts our major focus. And it's the interactive learning piece that we have a team now of teachers, students, families, and computers working together. I still believe in books. I have lots of literature books. We can't take that away. But we have children in our school who don't have books at home. So we have a really innovative kindergarten teacher who thought of a way to use an iShuffle with teacher talks and recorded books and things for them to take the teacher home with them at night, and that's been really powerful. We use phonemic awareness for phonetic sounds, vocabulary development, and information of other different types of genre from literature. I have a program called Braz Kids, and the kids go to the book room, and the parrot goes, "Work, work, 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 choose your book," and double A to J is first grade. And they love it. You click on the ear, and the ear reads you the story. You've got beautiful colored illustrations, and you've got electronic print, and you're in headphones.
Wow.
And that seems to really give them a lot of exposure to different vocabulary, to different types of stories and things. And then they get to go to the quiz, and they click on the quiz. And if you're a non-reader, you can click on the question. It will read the question to you and flash each word. Then you can click on the answers. It will do the same thing. And I have a child who wanted to read the sixth grade reading level on volcanoes. So I sat with him, who is basically a non-reader, and we went through the whole thing, and I kept thinking, oh, he's not getting this. This is just, and we did the quiz, and he got the answers and I didn't. So he was interested in listening to Keith there. The fluency piece is huge. We're using GarageBand for kids to tape in their own voices and read a story back to themselves, and they get the instant feedback that wasn't good enough. Something wasn't quite right there. I need to fix it a bit for self-assessment. For project-based, there's lots of research for textbooks, like I was saying. And I guess I'll move on to writing. And I think that part is really the key, because I believe that writing and reading are like a circle. The more you read, the more you write, and the more you write, the more you read. So this has really helped them with. On KidPix, we have them taking stamps, and we're doing neighborhoods and communities right now, and they took a neighborhood background, and they put all the key things that we've talked about there, and then they go to the typewriter and they type in their description or what they think. And that's hard for them, but they're typing phonetically with inventive spelling, and it's a great beginning for first graders. But I really see this as a great avenue and a chance to fill the achievement gap, because there's more opportunities to learn. They're learning from each other. There's creative ways for the children to show what they know. And a lot of kids don't do well on multiple tests. A lot of kids can't write it. But if they can show you and pull in all sorts of sensory, multiple intelligence sources, then they can really be proud of what they did, and you can find out what they know. And then ultimately, I really see this as setting a really good climate for our schools to help them be prepared to go into the OSATs, to use TESSA. And the other thing that's just out there that we don't even know what that will affect is all the parents that are coming in and are sitting with their child who say, "I don't read, I can't do this, but I'm learning through my child." And that's pretty powerful for us. So thank you for considering a bill like this for our schools.
Thank you.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Okay. I guess my one question, since we have a teacher who's immersed in this, your background, did you have background in computer use yourself? Or was
not a lot. I came on with email and with everyone else, and I was pretty much, I was really, nervous, but I kind of worked at it. And the one comment that I've made is that you have to give up some control. We're always thinking every kid should be right there with us, but sometimes that has to happen in the classroom, but you have to step back and let the children take some active ownership in their education. And I've always heard the thing, one of the presidents said that I will provide the education, but you have to bring the container. And it's like, they're filling their own containers now.
Can I follow?
Sure, absolutely.
How many students do you have in your class?
I have 20 currently.
20, okay. Mm-hmm. And do you have an assistant at all to help monitor?
I believe in student teachers. I have a student teacher every year, a practicum student, because we're helping them learn the way, plus they're helping us with another set of hands for kids in the classroom.
And do you find you're able to, because kids are moving at different speeds, are you able to kind of work the room and let those kids go at speeds that they need to go?
At first it was a little bit tricky, because they have to learn the rules and the behavior expectations, and And then once you kind of get them all on board, they all have a folder and they have their addresses on them, their codes to get in, and they all have memorized now and can get in.
Yep.
And the first thing they do in the morning is come in and fire it up.
And have you noticed, last question.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Have you noticed a difference in terms of the engagement in the classroom as a whole compared to last year's class that you had and this year's class? Is this year's class more engaged, or they seem to be more?
I think they really are more engaged and more interested and more excited about school because they have this fun, you know. They think it's like a video game, but I say, no, excuse me, we're doing learning programs. Video games are not in our schools.
Okay. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do the kindergarten kids and the first graders, do they get to take them home?
No.
Okay.
They have to keep them in school. They use the iShuffles. We targeted our intensive kids through the Dibbles data, and those kids get to take the iShuffles home, and it's the same. It's about 40 minutes every night. They have the same
thing
all week.
And what is that?
It is, we do like a book talk with them and a phonics lesson. And they are taking the teacher home with them using the iShuffles.
So that's like an iPod with headphones.
It looks like a stick of gum.
Yes, yeah.
And it's there's a little lanyard that sits around their necks. And we give them a packet with all the vocabulary words and the book. And then they go through it.
A couple other ones. But remember, next one was...
I've got several, too.
With respect to the... care of them in the classroom? Mm-hmm. Are the kids pretty respectful of the
machines?
We
spent one whole week talking about the feeding and care of our new laptop computer. And they are very good with them. And if they don't, they know there's consequences, and they lose it for the day.
And that's across the board at all grade levels. We did a lot of pre-teaching about the care of the laptop and expectations, and we build it into our PBS plan. There's a whole...
I know what PBS is, but... Would you say what PBS?
Positive behavior support.
Thank you.
And I guess my last one would just be a comment. Having a daughter who's now in graduate school to become a playwright, and we and the family knew that for a long time, and it's, again, that deal about being an immigrant and being, you know, native language speaker. She's been on that computer since she was born almost. And, you know, she started writing script with other people around the world in middle school. And they... back and forth, people in Australia, kids in Australia, older and younger, didn't make any difference. It has to do with how well you could write, not how old you were. And so that constant interaction and feedback from other people who you would not have otherwise had that opportunity to do, I think
enriching.
Is really enriching. It's really pretty remarkable to watch. So that's personal level. It's really amazing.
And I think as far as the laptops go, that's just one tool. There's so much more to technology than a laptop. And just being able to communicate with someone in another country via a podcast or via, you know, there's so much more to it than just a laptop. But the laptop actually is what filters all that together.
Right. It is our telephone. We thought that was pretty exciting. And we didn't have to pick it up and listen for the other person on the line to know we could use our line, which a few of us in this room, I mean, many of you may not have any idea about that, but there's still a few of us that had multiple line phones when we were kids, and so it's going to, you know, that transformation that we didn't have to worry about that anymore. We had our own line. It was pretty remarkable.
It was pretty cool. Representative Cannon?
Thank you, Chair Kopp. This sounds like a wonderful classroom, and I congratulate you on creating this kind of environment. I am the youngest member of the legislature, but I feel like in some ways perhaps I'm one of the more old-fashioned ones, because when I imagine the ideal, especially early grade class, I think I see children in social collaboration like you're describing and in working collaboration, but primarily through text and through books and through tools and hands-on ways that they can create and play and experiment. And what I don't see, and what I guess I have this like element of worry, and it sounds like your experience has been contrary, but I guess I do have some concern about the notion that a first grader might have, that information is always there on demand. You know, that if you want to get something, you can have it. And one of the skills that, you know, I try to foster in my students, and we certainly try to foster at our school, is that sense of patience and maturity, asking them to bring, you know, that willingness to wait, even if there is a line to talk to the teacher. So I'm interested in sort of how you've dealt with that, or your reflections on that. And again, it sounds like it's working totally wonderfully in your classroom, and all these outcomes that you've described are extraordinary. But what would you say to reassure that old-fashioned part of me?
I don't use this all day long. There's probably maybe there's a 40-minute period, there's about a 10-minute period. At the end of the day, they can go to specified places. If they finish their work in language arts, they know they can go to the literacy sites that we've all pre-taught and they've experienced and gone. And the same way with math. But there's still wait time, because if something isn't working right, they have to wait, but sometimes the child next to them can help them. And I think in some ways it's developed patience in a different way for first graders, because they're kind of their own little breed, and they're not patient people in the beginning, and they don't have very good independent skills, but they're very social. And I think I can see where you're coming from, and I agree with that, that you can't, this is not going to replace what's been the basis of good sound teaching for years past. I think it's just going to be something to help make it better.
I just had two comments, and I observed a kindergarten classroom, it was last fall sometime. I walked in there, and it was on computers, and they were doing their language arts on the computers. 35 of the little buggers. I'm a secondary person. Seriously, I praise God for people that teach elementary and kindergarten. I couldn't believe their engagement. I mean, they were all, like I said, they had to wait. The teacher couldn't get around to everybody at the same time. But the interaction, and I do work in Woodburn where multiple language, Russian, Spanish, English, all was just going on because they're helping each other, you know, do their language arts on this program. And it was pretty phenomenal. And then the other comment that I'd make, and it's more to the committee, I watched a report this weekend that at any given minute of the day, there's 17,000 jihad learning their religion, their very violent religion, online at all times. 17,000. And they have learned to use technology well to promote their agenda. And when I heard that, I really gasped. I thought, oh, we are in a state of urgency, maybe. I don't know. But it's interesting how other countries, other institutions, are taking advantage of the popularity of what's on the Internet. It was frightening because there's that many on there. What do you call that? Blog? Yeah. At any time.
I would like to just finish and say that as far as Internet safety and concern, I have really, really strong commitment to that, and that everything that I've used has been researched and used, and it's safe, and there really isn't any place that they go to that is wide open like that.
Yeah. I've been working with a group, American Medical Association, the WIVES, the Auxiliary, has a program on student safety on the Internet, and there's some good stuff out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
To help people, and young people in particular, understand the pros and cons, and parents, so that they are alerted to those kinds of things. And I appreciate your acknowledgement of that as well. Thanks.
Well, and your willingness to continue to change through your professional career to meet the needs of our children.
And
thank all of you.
Yeah, my one last comment, especially to Representative Cannon. One of the things that I was concerned about with computer usage of students was that it is an isolation event. It can be. I mean, there are people who get them lose themselves in the computer, and that is their only communication, not with others. And I was very concerned about that at the beginning of this as we watched it, because I watched a lot of students go that route. It became their thing that they cared about more than anything else. What I have found, though, as it grows and other people do, that it has become a social engine as opposed to the other, and it has connected people more closely. My daughter's friends, again, all over the country where they go to school or where they're living, have much better communication with each other than I ever had with my friends. It was kind of like if we bumped into each other 2 years later. I mean, they know where each other are. They are. She has multiple dialogues going on at the same time she's doing other things with five or six people at the same time. I don't know how they do that, but
I don't either.
But they do it constantly. And those of them that are safe with it, you know, even though she's out at college, she'll give my wife passwords and she can go in and just watch. And she said, I mean, it's really kind of a neat thing to recognize that people are well and doing things out there and sharing stuff back and forth. And for a lot of people, it's become a very open thing as opposed to the other way. So.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing the positive side of my line. Yes. Thank you for your testimony.
You
appreciate your time.
Madam Chair.
I'm going to ask Steve Nelson to come up if you have some thoughts on any of the testimony or what you've heard today. And Steve is from the Oregon Department of Education. And I'm not going to ask you anything about the computerized assessment today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know nothing, so...
And I think just for process sake, what we'll do is we'll hear Steve's testimony and then probably close the hearing today and reschedule House Bill 2043 for another day. Go ahead, Steve. You identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Steve Nelson. I am the program manager at the Oregon Department of Education for the Oregon Virtual School District and the administrator for the one-to-one pilot program. This is a program that we've done cooperatively with Oregon's educational service districts. It's a pilot that's serving 4 sixth-grade middle schools throughout Oregon. And briefly, they are Tumalo and Redmond Middle School, Forest Grove, Northwest Regional ESD, so and High Desert ESD, and then Malheur in the Vail Middle School. I would ask you, Madam Chair, would you like me to start broad, given the previous testimony, or narrow, discussing what we're doing with the pilots?
I would like to give us a 5-minute overview and another 5 minutes for questions, and you can handle it any way you see fit.
It's your wish.
And I'm sure you probably have 30 minutes here.
No, I will be as brief or as wordy as you prefer. With the sensitivity of time, I would direct you, and this is not testimony, these are just handouts for your review. On the second page, the brief overview, and thank you for having the wisdom of bringing forward some of our good friends from the Eugene-Springfield area. One of my, because it makes my job easier, but one of my favorite people isn't here, who's Ava Lamar, who's been a wonderful resource for us under Superintendent Golden with providing us, as I would call, policies and procedures out to the new one-to-one pilots that are funded by Intel and the department and the ESDs. They've been wonderful. Most of the pilots have gone and visited Springfield Middle School to, again, see how it really works and try and learn from the work that's been done beforehand. The top line on the second page, we do have a computing deficit for teaching and learning in Oregon. One-to-one is one way to attack that. It's very effective throughout the country. Quite frankly, we wouldn't have started this if we hadn't been able to create a very generous partnership with Intel to generate enough resources, and that's outlined below on financing this. In the governor's recommended budget, there is $1.8 million to expand the pilots that we have going on. And the folks from Springfield and Eugene articulated that there are some very wise things you can do with purchasing. And our hope, if that money is appropriated by the legislature, is to turn that into a purchase and lease that is beyond one-to-one computing initiatives, but also for desktops and ancillary computing items like whiteboards and potentially projectors. Aggregating the purchasing power of education is extremely important because as you look at the sustainability of something like this, the taxpayers can't fund all of it directly through the legislature and the general fund. That's just not feasible. But we do have an opportunity to distribute those costs between the legislature, some redirection of local funds, and also the private sector. You see the numbers that Intel has stepped forward with to date. It's phenomenal. The initial 200 computers that we started at the 4 pilot schools were all donated by Intel. They just appropriated another $50,000 to start the next purchase to keep those 4 schools going. In the next round, and they've been fairly phenomenal with professional development resources, lending us their staff time, helping us get out the word through their PR machine. And what you have at the end of the day is a batch of sixth graders throughout the state that are overjoyed that they can get their hands on these. At this point in time, all the students have their laptops. Some of them are taking them home and some of them are not. This being Oregon, 1,200 schools will do it 1,200 slightly different ways. And as long as that's a finite number, I'm okay with that. And they're going to continue being Apple because they forged a wonderful partnership with the Apple Corporation. Some are going to be PC for the same reason. Some are going to be Linux. Again, as long as it's a finite number and we're smart about our resources, I really don't care. Because I'm a native Californian, but I come up here, and the Oregon pioneer spirit and the ingenuity you bring together when they get that individual ownership far outweighs any kind of redundancy by people recreating using different systems. And that local ownership for education, keeping the teacher central at all of this, is what's most important. The pilots are going well. We have a professional evaluator dedicated to us from the Center on Digital Education that is funded through Intel. So we are setting them all up on evaluation so that we can study this over time. I won't sit here before you and tell you that this is a cost saver. Unfortunately, everything I do for the state of Oregon does not save the state money. It provides new opportunities, both the Oregon Virtual School District and the one-to-one opportunity. But if we can use the funds wisely and we can distribute those costs in a variety of ways, and even looking in a lease program in terms of equity is something as aggressive as the opportunity for a family that can buy their student a laptop, the opportunity to get a heavily discounted leasing program through our aggregate buy. There's a number of things we need to look at in the next 9 months in terms of setting up the next round of this.
Mm-hmm.
But what you heard from these folks is more important than what I have to tell you in terms of what the state is doing, because they've got proof that when I was growing up, it was paper. Now it's computers. My 9-year-old has a blog, and my 6-year-old has an email account. And he says he can't read, but he can type email messages, so he can read. And I think I'm pretty close to my 5 minutes.
Well, you've done very well. Questions? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Nelson, the proposal before us is a task force on school computers. Would such a task force be a positive vehicle for, I mean, you're already kind of in mode with this program. Would this be something that would be beneficial to help you look at statewide what we're doing?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, anytime the legislature wants to take hold of an initiative like this and provide your input, it's extraordinarily important. The department at this time does not have a position on this bill. What I will tell you is when we set up a leasing program, let me dig into the dirt for a second, we're probably looking at a 1-year buy period with a 3-year lease so that we don't commit the state of Oregon to funds passed a biennium. We need to know going into the next legislative session if this is a good thing. And the only way we're going to be able to communicate that it's a good thing is have some of you folks on the ground with us participating in that development. So I would say regardless of the bill, we certainly hope that we have your involvement over the next 2-year period since you all and the governor's office make the decisions.
Okay. Well, we're just going to take just a moment. Representative Roblin, because we just heard that there's a call at the House, but we're going to check. Representative Roblin, did you have a question?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to say, Mr. Nelson, is first of all, I'd really appreciate you coming, and that I won't detain us because I see three people ready to jump out of their chairs here. But while you're still in place, I want to really thank Representative Beyer, because this is a continuation of some of our discussion about a tool to assist teachers to help children learn. And I want to make sure that people know it's not replacing a teacher. It's because we are who we are as educators. And if a tool could do it, we wouldn't have us. So what's the word? The bell is ringing, and I'm a school teacher, and I understand when the bell rings, it's time to go to your next class.
Our superintendent of public instruction puts students and teachers first.
Absolutely.
And we completely agree with you that these are tools to help bring better education to the classroom.
Thank you
for your time today.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2750 and close our meeting for today.
Thank you,
members.
Thank you.